Hi everyone, you are now listening to our podcast, For a While. We are just two Filipina 30-somethings now currently based elsewhere in the world, trying to find our way and figuring out what that means for us. Our podcast is where we take a little break to regroup, share what we've learned, and find new ways to move forward. I'm Kirsty.
And I'm Andrea, and if you hear something that resonates, we'd love for you to let us know.
In this episode of For a While, we welcome our very, very first guest, Mench Dizon. Mench wears many hats, including tech entrepreneur, corporate innovation consultant, mother, wife, and athlete. Mench currently has found her space in the intersection of corporate and innovation in her role at 917 Ventures. She has made this journey from over 15 years in corporate doing marketing, brand strategy, and digital marketing, as well as over 5 years doing technology startup businesses. Always looking for ways to blend her fascinations across various topics, she recently launched Area 63 Fitness. Part of its advocacy is to help fitness professionals and businesses sustain their livelihood by providing them access to a wide corporate network. Fitness has taught her so much about showing up in the work that she does every day, and so she considers this as a way to give back. Plus, nothing beats the act of creating and putting something out there, no matter how scary it seems. We start off this episode with Mench telling us a little bit about what she's been up to and what she's been doing right now as far as work is concerned.
Hi, Mench.
How have you been? Can you share with us what you've been doing as far as work is concerned?
My focus now is with 917 Ventures, and it's the innovation group of Globe. So I think it's a good coming together of my corporate life, which I've been doing for the past 15 years. And then I delved into technology and startups over the past 5 years. And now I'm seeing myself in this whole intersection of corporate and innovation, which I kind of like because it's a bit of startup, it's a bit of corporate. So a good mix of both. And that's what I've been doing since early February, just right before the pandemic. So I'm doing business development for them. And yeah, that's what has been keeping me busy. That's my 9 to 5.
Sounds really exciting to have like an intersection of startup and corporate, as you mentioned. And when I think startup, it's very lean, very agile. And I'm wondering how your workflow has incorporated that influence working with 917.
It's the same. Actually, I think it takes inspiration from a very lean, very agile work environment where things are launched and they break before they're actually fully made, which is very different from what we're used to in corporate where we need to have everything in place, ironed out. So it's that whole, I guess, combination of being nimble and quick-footed. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you also have the maturity of being in a corporate setup. So you get to think things through and not just like be shooting from the hip. No? So I like that whole combination. I think it blends well with what I've been doing over the past 20 years now. So it's like a coming together of sorts. Yeah.
That's nice. And I'm really wondering, what's it like, especially now with the pandemic? How has it been? How have you shifted? Or when you started, has it been all about focusing on innovating in the midst of COVID?
You know, I think I'm very lucky to be one of those people who thrives well, during these times. And I say that because I hear a lot of stories about people struggling and being challenged during these times. And I say that I'm doing surprisingly well because I'm someone who is always out and about and can't keep still. I want to be always out doing something. And so with the idea of being stuck at home, if I were to ask my old self, it would be something that is so uncharacteristic of me, no? But so far, so good, no? And I think it's because even at the start, there was an initial acceptance that this is how things would be. And there's no point in struggling and just challenging things, but really just figuring out how this may work for us. So that was very clear at the start, that sort of openness and acceptance. And I think it was also quite a blessing, because in the work that I do for 917 Ventures, it's focused primarily on business development and merchant acquisition. And so during the pandemic, I was able to onboard close to 200 merchants, no? over a period of 3-4 months. And I wouldn't have been able to do this if I were doing face-to-face meetings and spending maybe more time in traffic going from meeting to the other. But because people now were just meeting via Zoom, via Google Hangouts, I was able to just like talk to as many small and medium enterprises during this period and have all these conversations, how ask how they are, and talk to them about the business that we're doing and the product that they take advantage of at 917 Ventures. So on the work side, it's been quite good, no? On the family side of things, I think we're blessed because our kids are also very independent, and they're at a certain age where they're still quite malleable, not much angst, and you can
they're
still
flexible.
Ask them, flexible, ask them to do things, but independent, so they can do their own tasks, their chores, they can manage their schooling well, even as we shifted to a homeschool distance learning setup. And on the relationship side with my husband, the man, he's always been someone who works from home, and he's been leading remote teams for over a decade now. So he's quite used to this whole setup. And yeah, that the pandemic has really just given us more time to create. Yeah.
And you mentioned onboarding merchants for work. Is it more for enabling digital transactions, going cashless?
It's really about digital transformation, no? So what we do for 917 Ventures is we provide an opportunity for merchants to promote their offers online, specifically via Viber Messenger and Facebook Messenger and via our website. So it's a way for them to have a taste, no, of how they may promote via digital platforms outside of Facebook and Instagram. I think it was also much easier for us to onboard because people were looking for ways to just promote themselves. And we were offering it as a service, meaning we didn't ask them to pay for anything. It was really a part of a bounce back approach, bounce back advocacy. So we were able to provide them a platform where they could just increase their market reach and awareness. No?
Mm-hmm. And of course, the pandemic must have contributed to the onboarding. They must have felt the urgency more to digitally transform. I saw a meme where there was a poll about, you know, who's leading digital transformation in your company. Is it the CEO or the CIO, or is it COVID?
Yeah, you know, it's so true. No, it's like all these businesses were really forced to take stock of what they had and how they could repurpose this so they could turn it into a digital repurposed business. No? So a lot of these merchants are actually, at the start of the pandemic, scrambling. No? Most of them, maybe if you ask me, maybe 80% of them were scrambling and just trying to find ways how they could just take advantage of digital platforms. Very few had the proper foundations and the right fundamentals in place for them to take advantage of what's available online. You know, towards maybe 2-3 months after the pandemic, as I continue to engage with these merchants, understanding how they are and just asking them how they are and how they've been keeping up during these times, you could sense that they've started to learn and accept, no, that this is how things would be, and now are exploring having cashless payments, learning Shopify, selling via Facebook channels, Instagram channels, and also engaging in community selling in Viber communities and all these messenger community commerce, no? So you see a lot of interesting behaviors also rising from businesses trying to go online and also individuals trying to find ways to augment their income via digital commerce.
Oh, I'm very interested to learn about the behaviors that you mentioned. Is that something you can share?
Yeah. So for instance, The behavior that I've been observing in terms of commerce is the increasing trend of community commerce. I'm seeing this like a new type of B2C. So B2C is business to consumer, no? But what we're seeing is like a B2C where it's a business community. Think about it as like you have a bunch of informal resellers trying to sell to their individual networks where they're getting products from various brands and reselling it to their respective communities. So the individual consumers wouldn't be charged with the logistics fees, the fulfillment fees. So it's like there's a centralized hub within a community, typically a village or a condo community, where all the orders are centralized and then that gets distributed now to the individual consumers within the community. So it's fascinating how you have these emerging setups, no, that organically come out, no, of like typical commerce. So that's one thing. Another thing would be you can really see here, at least in the Philippines, and of course I have a little bit of visibility in terms of how many people are actually using GCash now, no? So you see the surge in terms of the use of all these wallets, all of these frictionless ways of paying. And I think what's fascinating about e-commerce during this time here in the Philippines is that the fundamentals are pretty much in place, the logistics, the payments, which were kind of wonky several years ago, but have figured out how to get more efficient over the past few years, are in place now. So even if they don't have the necessary like end-to-end commerce, they kind of cobble together all these components and put together some semblance of e-commerce fulfillment that's just a putting together of all the different modules from logistics to payment. So let's say, for instance, I order something via Instagram, I pay via GCash BPI, it gets sent to me, or I get to book a fulfillment for the package via Lalamu, via Grab. So all these little components are in place, making e-commerce digital transformation more, I guess, accessible, even to the smallest of merchants. Yeah, even to individual merchants. So it's a very good time, actually, to be in this space.
Yeah, it sounds super exciting. I was wondering, since you're onboarding merchants and there are so many people right now who are starting their own businesses from their home, making food for people to enjoy and just have them delivered. Do you have experience with that? You know, ordering maybe pandesal from a neighbor online?
Oh, yeah. You know, I try to avoid Instagram now because I realize I'm such an impulsive buyer. I get to be swayed by these really pretty posts by all these influencers. I didn't realize I'm driven by that as well. But yeah, they make it so easy now to access that. No? So it's like on Instagram, you're doing your window shopping. So instead of just like browsing through people's photos just for the heck of it, now you're thinking of, oh my God, it's a coming week. I still have to prepare a meal program, no, for the rest of the week, and of course find treats for the kids and for the family. So that's the window shopping part, just the browsing. And then before you know it, I'm privately messaging this person, and then after a minute or so, I'm sending a GCash screenshot of my payment to him and agreeing to book my delivery for the next Wednesday. So it's now a different way of shopping, even for staples that happens to me now. So I also get to discover suppliers for fresh produce, for grocery staples, etc. But also, I think in the work that I do for 917 Ventures, where I get to talk to all these small and medium enterprises, after having a chat with them, I'm compelled to order from them. So I think bulk of my income for the month goes to supporting all these small businesses. I don't mind at all because it actually just expands the universe of choices for my family in terms of just the food that's made available. Before, it was just maybe a response marketplace for all our staples. But now I can order from all these small businesses, people sharing their heirloom recipes, people following their culinary passion. So I like following these people and ordering from them as a way to support.
It's very interesting that you mentioned that because I believe it's quite different in the US where you have all of these big box stores that remain open and it's the small businesses that are getting really affected by the lockdown. But in the Philippines, especially with GCash enabling a lot of the digital transactions with the e-wallet, it's so much easier to support small businesses these days. And because they are small businesses, they're incredibly agile in being able to, for example, send something to you. They're more likely to customize like a particular order. And there are even some businesses I've read na when they deliver party trays, nakikipasabay na din yung mga nag-order. Like, pasama mo na din ng Coke or whatever. So it's really funny.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's this whole concept of bayanihan, no? That's one. The second could be, parang Pinoy's always have a racket eh. Parang we're always hustling eh, di ba? Parang you're either selling something on the side or you know someone who's selling something and so you'll offer it to another person. So parang I think it's also a cultural thing. Yeah, and I guess related to bayanihan is the whole community, no? You trust people within your community. So even as, let's say, this pandesal came from somewhere else, just because it's now being brought to your village by your neighbor, diba? Yeah. Then that means that it's kind of vetted in terms of quality, or at least you know it's gonna get to you because your neighbor will ship it to you, no? Or bring it to your home.
And you trust your neighbor's taste.
Yes. Kumbaga, if you're part of a village or at least a condo, you pretty much have a sense na, okay, we're kind of the same. Right?
Yeah.
You filter in terms of like the type of people who you live next to, no? Your neighborhood or your community. If it's not a neighbor, it's a community, no? If you are part of different types of communities.
Mm-hmm. Do you envision this being something that continues past reopening everything? For instance, if we get a vaccine next year and the shops, the malls open back, do you envision this being something that people stick to, or will people be like, I miss the mall, I can go to the mall now?
I think people will start to identify the different purposes of commerce, no? So I guess it's going to be more, at least for me, no, the way I would look at it is a more deliberate approach to commerce where certain executions or certain, like a mall would represent this type of purchases, like an online would, I would do this for this particular type of purchase. So I think it will change definitely the buying behavior, the purchasing behavior. What it does, it really gives you like a wider range of options in terms of the different permutations that you may put together that suits your specific life stage, your specific circumstance. No? So I think people will really just kind of compartmentalize their buying based on these different choices that's made available. But what is clear is that, at least I would think, that this whole hybrid approach of offline online is going to be the normal, no? Just because people had a taste of more online during this pandemic, it gave them an opportunity to see, oh my God, I have all these choices. I can have these products available to me, sent to me without me having to go all the way there or call or even like visit. Yeah, no? So it's really just providing choices and options, and it's on people to just, and consumers to just really navigate through those choices and identify how they would plan, no, their buying and their purchasing with all those choices.
I think just from my family themselves back home in Cebu, they're buying like their meat straight from people who are making them rather than going to the supermarket, or they're buying vegetables that are being sent straight from like the south, Dalaget, from the mountains where they grow it. And there also seems to be like this feeling from people who are purchasing now that people feel good about helping other people as well.
Yeah. I think that's right. And they know that because they're buying straight from the source, then that means that they're maximizing the margins for these people in a way, helping them out. And also, at the same time, getting it at a much better quality, no? just because it's straight from the source, no? So it actually works both ways. But to relate that to what I also previously mentioned, it's really providing choices for people and giving them the opportunity to say, okay, for my fresh produce, these are my choices. So before, if it were just like going to one grocery and doing everything there, now you're doing it across different providers. Mm. It may seem a little bit less efficient, but actually, if you factor in the quality, if you factor in even the narrative, no, of these products, no, it also gives a little bit more gravity and also a sense that you're also helping person out versus just buying, no, or at least having a transactional relationship. It's actually helping someone out, no, a person out, a farmer out.
Mm-hmm. What is your daily routine like currently in terms of work and just everyday life? How has that changed? I know that you mentioned that, you know, you're not stuck in traffic that much anymore, but are there other things that change much?
You know, I'm such a creature of routine. So this whole pandemic has been really good for me just because I can control the time that I allocate for the stuff that I want to put my energy and time into. A day starts at 8:30. I realize that I really need my 8 hours worth of sleep. And the only reason I woke up at 5:30 pre-pandemic is because I needed to be out before the traffic escalates, no? But if I were to listen to my natural circadian rhythm, my wake-up time would be 7:30 for me to be able to get a full night's sleep. And I realized that's super important to me. My day starts at 8:30. I do my morning meditation. Well, I prepare coffee for my husband and breakfast and then do my morning meditation and then do a little bit of pre-work prep. And then at 9:30 is our daily stand-up. So we do a daily check-in for the work that I do. And I think very important to do these things, no? For anyone doing remote work, I think it's important to do a start of the day check-in just so everyone knows the day's priorities, no? And if there are any blocks that need to be addressed. And what are the dependencies? So it's just a quick one, maybe a 15-minute one, just to just get those key things out of the way. And the rest is just really work, meetings after meetings. So my day typically is comprised of maybe 7 to 10 meetings. And I don't mind. I treat these meetings as conversations, not as a way to just really get to know more about merchants, how they're doing, how we may be able to be of help not to them. Mm-hmm. And then there's another check-in at the end of the day at 5:00 p.m. End of day to just catch up on what happened and what are the things that we need to be updated on. I do my workouts in the evening. Before, I used to do all my workouts in the morning, but just because there's no more traffic to be worried about at the end of the day, traffic time is now my workout time. And then it's preparing dinner for the family. And then I get to do my after-work creations, after-work projects, no? After dinner or even right before dinner. So I do a quick 15-minute check-in with my partner for Area 63, the new project that I'm working on. So we get to just talk about what needs to get done, no? And we do this day-to-day. I'm a firm believer of everyday work. The stuff that you do day to day kind of just aggregates to the outputs that you would want to get out of this whole process. So it's a process-oriented approach to creation, no? Where it's not about just the outcome, but it's really just the showing up day to day, which I kind of like because it kind of blends into the idea of creating habits around the stuff that is important to you. So yeah, that is my weekday. My weekends are a little bit more fluid, but my weekdays are set that way. It's a little bit, I guess, more structured, but I thrive in that kind of structure, so it works well.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning Area 63 Fitness. It's such a good idea, and it's nice to know that it's a personal project. Just wanted to ask what the thought process was with coming up with that idea. Did you really deliberately sit down and try to come up with something to help aid in digital transformation during this time, or did you just have that idea that wouldn't it be nice if this platform existed and then just made it happen?
You know how it started was through the conversations that I was having with the merchants and brands I was talking to for my day job, maybe around April or May, I saw that a lot of the fitness studios were starting to offer paid for classes. They started this, parang two-phase yan eh, where the first phase was they offered free classes on Instagram and Facebook Live so they could just keep their communities engaged. And then, come April or May, they started to offer paid-for classes just because they needed to keep their businesses going. But when I started attending all these classes, I noticed that only a few people attended. So I felt that, oh my God, these people, they're actually spending the same energy, the same effort running these classes, but they're not gaining the student ratio, the market numbers, no? That they would need to keep their businesses afloat. And so I was having these conversations with merchants because I was supporting them for my 917 Ventures job. And I got to validate all these observations that it was really a challenge of getting a market beyond their communities, beyond their families, beyond the people who already were seeking out their services. And so I felt that there could be an opportunity for us to put together all these trainers. So we call it Area 63 because Area 63 is the area code of the Philippines, plus 63, right? And so we wanted to curate the Philippines' best trainers and studios, put them together in a singular platform, and offer them to a corporate market. And the reason why I thought of offering it to a corporate market is that that's a market that I know. I've always been selling to corporates and I know how to package together a campaign to offer to corporates. But these trainers, these studios, they don't have that benefit. They don't have that advantage. All they know is their craft, no? Their practice of yoga, their practice of teaching Pilates, but they don't really know how to market themselves to a corporate audience. So that's the advantage that we have that we can provide to them. So this whole Area 63 experiment just started with those conversations. And then a partner of mine just said, maybe Mensch, we could put together this as an initial idea. And we just started by talking to studios, talking to trainers, sharing with them the vision of what we had via a deck. No, we didn't have anything. It was just a presentation that we were peddling around and we showed it to them. And then we coupled together a WordPress site and found another tool online called Acuity that allows for scheduling. So it's just the idea of, okay, we validated it. It's a real need. It's a challenge for them. We can help them with this. Let's put together something simple where we showcase all these trainers, put their schedules in, and then start selling to corporates. We work on it on a day-to-day basis, trying to just iterate on it. One thing that I learned is that you just have to put it out there. Even if it's scary to put a new idea out there, you can't really tell how it'll fare unless you have the market, no? Tell you whether this is something that is for them or not for them. You will lose a lot of time just second guessing yourself or trying to figure out all possible scenarios, but there's really nothing like putting it out there, as scary as it seems.
Thanks for that advice, Mensch.
I guess it's the same with you ladies, no? With putting this whole podcast out there without knowing how it's gonna be received, no? But that's the beauty of it.
Thanks so much for being our guest.
And supporting our project.
Of course, yeah.
You said you wanted to curate the trainers. I mean, we do have friends. Can they join in or is there a selection process?
No, you know, they just have to just signify an interest. And you know what's fascinating about Area 63 is that as I continue to just reach out to all types of trainers from wherever they are, I discovered that there are really these underrated, undervalued trainer studios that are outside of the typical Bonifacio Global City and Makati circuits where you have all these popular studios. But you know, there are these hidden gems that are in Baguio, in Iloilo, all over the Philippines, with all these trainers that are very passionate, very credible, very eager, not to just really share their practice and craft that just needs to be discovered. And that's, I think, part of what drives me in building this space, no? Because they just need the exposure. They just need the market. They have it in them to just give their best, no? And to provide a very good practice and offer it to individuals who are seeking, no? To also create these habits of fitness into their life. So one thing that makes my heart swell whenever I get to discover these trainers and studios who are really like striving to be the best at what they do and just wanting to be exposed, wanting to be discovered by a market that will value and really pay also, no, for what they spend their time and energy on. So I always tell them to not shortchange themselves, diba? Na parang if you feel that your one-on-one class has to be at ₱1,000, then you should go with that. And to not just be driven by, okay, everyone is just lowering their prices, etc. But you have to be able to provide the same value and charge for that value. And that's what we want them to have. So yeah, any trainer, any studio, we're quite open to engage. And we just are very much open to just accepting. Of course, we're vetting it. That's why I've been attending all these classes. For research so and fun. Also for vetting. Yeah.
It's super like bagay
to,
for
I get
you.
To sample. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know, on that note, I think you will really find what works for you if you listen to your intuition. And you have a feel of what works for you. And to try not to force yourself into things that parang you're just doing it because it makes sense, diba? Or parang it makes money, diba? So there's a sense within you that will tell you, oh, you know, this is the right path for me. So at least for now, this is the path for me, no? Just following that impulse, following that intuition. But the putting it out there kasi gives it the validation, which also kind of counters it, no? So it gives you a feedback. So you know that your intuition also has a possible commercial path, or at least it's sustainable path, no? Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So inspiring, Manj. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just quick follow-up on Area 63. I'm really, really curious, I think, because I think about what's going to happen in a year, what's going to happen in 6 months. I talk to Andrea about this a lot, where I'm like, I have so many worries about being out in crowds and things like that. And I think one of the things I've pretty much have decided for myself is that I probably won't visit like a proper gym, like a, you know, like the traditional gym in probably the next year or something. So one of the things I've been doing is like, I have like an online trainer at the moment, and that's been working really, really nicely. She's from Cebu, which is really nice. But would Area 63 be a place where people would be able to, like you said, sample different types of workouts that maybe, for instance, if you went to a traditional gym, they've got the schedule, you can try like 10 different types of classes. Is that an option there as well?
Yes, that will be the option. But currently, because we're just starting out, you can just book a class at a time. But the idea is like you can avail of packages, right? So for instance, you could do like a month pass or a 3 month pass, and then it could be an unlimited set of classes. But for now, what's available on the site is, because we're also just like testing it, is you can book on a per class at a time. But what it affords you is that it gives you a wide range of classes. So for instance, if you just go to a yoga studio where they could just have yoga types of activities, no? But here you can have yoga, you can have high intensity, you can have Pilates, you can have bar, you can have cardio dance, you can have strength and conditioning. So all these types of classes. And you get to discover that as you go into Area 63. You discover by a free trial that was offered to your company that you were given a yoga class. So you try that yoga class. But when you get into Area 63, you discover that, hey, they have other classes that are available, no? And these are the schedules. So yeah, it's definitely for people to try out different workouts, different activities. And we want to be able to also expand beyond just workouts, also dabbling into nutrition, dabbling into mindset, meditation, mindfulness. That's why I think it makes sense for us to offer it as a holistic wellness program to companies, because there's a little bit of that, no? As a component. And for companies now, their challenge is their employees are struggling, no? With everything just coming together in the home. They're now homeschooling, working from home, doing all the chores, getting all the project deadlines. So it's all very stressful. So fitness and wellness is a way for them to just ease that burden. No? It's, I think, a very good proposition. Plus, we have the variety of workouts. So their employee base, especially if it's a larger corporation, they don't have to be limited to just one type of workout just because we have a spectrum, no, of choices.
Mm-hmm. How are you finding these companies are responding to this? Are they quite enthusiastic?
Oh, yeah, surprisingly. And because maybe we're offering it as a free trial, who can't say no to a free trial, right? But that's really the approach, you know. I realized in the work that I do, you have to make it so easy for them to say yes to you, okay? So what will make them say yes? You offer it for free. But the free trial is actually a very deliberate way to reach the market that we want to address. The first reason is that when we offer it as a free trial, they get to discover us as a provider of corporate wellness. So they themselves can be a client of ours. So they can eventually tell us, you know, Mensch, can you offer this type of work, this type of program 4 times a month? So that gets me a corporate client. The second intention is to get all their employees to get to know us. So that means that I don't have to pay to run several Facebook ads or Instagram ads to reach 100 employees, right? If I give them a free trial, they know that Area 63 exists. I can send them an email after the workout and they get to discover what Area 63 is all about. So it's a smarter way to get to a consumer market without having to do a direct-to-consumer approach. I wouldn't have been able to do this if I haven't got burned in different other methods doing my startup journey, no? But it's what seems to work, at least for me and the businesses that I want to do, is it's direct to corporations where you're able to provide value to the companies that you engage. And at the same time, as you enter and provide them value, they give you value in terms of the reach, in terms of the market that you are able to address.
Nice. It's such a great way to help employees, like in just supporting their general health and well-being.
Yeah.
It's just one more thing to take off of the table for them to like organize themselves and all that. So it sounds really, really good. I wish my my company offered something like that.
Yeah. And I think on that note, just to relate to just what you mentioned, I think when you do something that is about others, about someone beyond yourself, like for instance, for this, it's for the employees or also for the fitness trainers, the fitness businesses that I want to help out. There's something about that whole magic, no? When you create for something other than yourself, because there's that drive, no? To give back to others, that kind of energizes you, and that energy also radiates, no? To the people, to the companies, to the trainers you get to talk to, and they get to see now this is really something for them. So you don't need to convince them so much if you're able to really show that this is not just for you, but for them as well.
And the first tip that you provided early on during the interview, the most important thing is really just to accept the reality. And when you stop being in resistance, you're more open to opportunities, you're more open to following your intuition, you stop second guessing yourself, and you have the energy to build something different. So I think the pointers that you shared have been very much central to, you know, being able to come up with something like this.
Yeah. I think if you struggle, you're just spending too much energy, no? I'm just challenging the current reality that we have, where you're trying to go against how things are, no? Instead of just channeling that energy towards something more creative, more giving, more generous.
Thanks so much for that. With your experience going window shopping on Instagram and working with the merchants that you do, do you have any other tips for how small to medium enterprises, first-time business owners, pandemic home bakers, do you have any tips for them to improve their digital transformation, or are there any opportunities that they can look into to help grow their business further?
For these individuals who are just like doing it for the first time and using Instagram as a channel, that's a good start. Huh? Just get your product out there as quickly as possible, get an audience and get the sale. Huh? But if you're serious about it, it would make sense for you to work on your fundamentals, meaning you have a proper website where you can do commerce that can integrate to a payment gateway, logistics partner, and engagement, email marketing, SMS, etc. So it's really just putting together a structure for you to be able to scale, no, at least, or to make your business more sustainable. That's it, siguro, on the tools and on the product structure side of things. The second is on the discoverability, no? How you may think of your product beyond just like peddling it to influencers or just spending so much money on Facebook ads and Instagram, but really looking at it holistically in terms of what's my digital marketing mix. And looking at it from a performance-based approach where I spend my time, my money, my energy on efforts that give me the most conversion. Not looking at it really from a more conversions play where you're looking at, okay, these are my efforts. How may I attribute my results based on the activities that I do? And then once I know what activities work, then I can just do more of that and double down. So that's it on the performance marketing. You have your tools in place, you have your performance marketing, and also maybe on the product side of things, no? Where you're always just iterating on your product, trying to listen to your customers, how you can better improve it, or if they would like to still have other variants of it, and always just keeping in tune, no, to the market. And I think as an entrepreneur, you always have to be in touch, no, with the market. And because you have all these tools that will allow you to reach out to them to ask how their experience was, then you can create a product that is best suited for the market that you'd like to reach. But I guess across all those things, no, it's always getting the feedback, no? So your platform, you put it out there as quickly as possible, you get feedback. You do your ads, you do your efforts, it gives you feedback, it tells you what to do next. You go to your market, ask them about your product, it gives you feedback. It's always that loop, no? That allows you to provide a much better product, to hone your business, see the gaps in the market, to see the gaps in your operations. So yeah, I think at least I would like to do that for the business that I would do. No? Is that whole cycle of feedback loop and iteration.
We have been talking a lot about SMEs and what they can do. And you mentioned also the behavior of the buyers, that there's a proliferation of adoption for e-wallets like GCash. Is that something that's happening across all income classes or market segments, or is it specific to a particular one?
I think it is across all segments. And I say that because I tried ordering from all types. And there always is an option to pay via GCash or an online transfer. So I guess people were forced to adapt to this just because otherwise they wouldn't be able to accept payment, right? Mm. And everyone has a phone, and it's just a matter of doing the Know Your Customer or KYC, no, to be able to activate a GCash wallet. And, you know, I also observe this in the interactions that my husband is having with some of the groups that he's engaging with, because he's also into blockchain and cryptocurrency. Based on my observation, I get to see him work with different types of people and interacting via wallets. So I think the behavior of and usage of wallets has trickled, no, beyond the ABC segments, just because people are forced now to receive and send money via these platforms. this pandemic has accelerated the adoption rate for the wallets and cashless transactions.
I think that's it from me. Kirsty, do you have anything else?
No, I've gone through my list.
Yeah, thanks so much, Mensch. And is there anything else that you want to promote aside from Area 63 Fitness?
Maybe a last note, no? Things will be like this for a bit of time. And as we internalize that, it also would be good for us to accept that this is where we are and this is where we start. No? We create where we are, we create with our strengths, we create with our weaknesses, we create with our abilities. And from where we are, we also can see how we can help better, right? So we can channel the struggle to a creation instead. How we can be more, I guess, accepting and giving in this way of living so we can provide a more wholehearted approach to the way we lead our lives day to day. And as we approach our lives that way, no, we can also affect the lives of our children, our spouses, of our partners, of the business people we work with day to day. Because they too, no, are going through this whole struggle. But if we help ease them into this whole sense of, you know, we're all in this together, then I guess we're helping out, no? In the best way that we can.
Yeah.
That's a really perfect end note there.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for coming on and talking to us. I really appreciate it. It was really nice to meet you today.
Thank you so much, Mensch. Have a good rest of the Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Andrea, Kirsty.
Thank you so much.
Take care and your family.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi. That was really good.
Awesome.
That was really good.
I learned a lot. I learned so much. I mean, I obviously don't work in that kind of space. So it's interesting to hear insights. I'm also not in the Philippines at the moment. So nice to hear about what's going on there and what's going on for businesses there. Mm-hmm. And some really good life advice as well.
Actually, you know, I really feel like the universe is talking to me. Remember we were talking about it yesterday. You spend so much time second guessing myself, and then Mensch comes and say, you know, if you keep second guessing yourself, you're gonna stop yourself from offering anything of value to your communities.
There was a part there as well where she was talking about putting things out there and the feedback loop and stuff. And it very much reminded me of something that I had last week or 2 weeks ago had written in my journal that I heard someone say in another podcast, which was that you should just fail faster. The faster you fail, the faster you identify what needs to be fixed or what needs to be changed. And if you just do that quickly, then you get to success quicker. Yes, but there definitely is like some friction in starting and feeling as if that fear of failing. But then, yeah, there needs to be this shift in our minds of, well, failing isn't something to be feared. It's something that you have to kind of really just expect. It's going to happen. But the key thing is just once you fail, well, what are you going to do next?
I think it's really now just a matter of turning down that volume of that other voice in your head that says all of these negative things and then just pushing forward. I think it really is just a matter now of resilience and deciding and committing to yourself and redirecting your energy towards something that's more productive instead of all of those voices and the anxiety. So yeah, that was really good.
And that's another episode of For a While. Thank you so much for listening to this episode in particular. This was an extra special one because we had our very, very first guest, Mensch Dizon. Thank you so much, Mensch, again, for speaking with us. Please follow her on Instagram.com/wineplusone and also visit area63fitness.com. Area 63 is currently looking for trainers to be part of their curated classes, companies seeking employee engagement programs, and brands aligned with their values. Again, please visit area63fitness.com.
Before you go, please do rate the podcast below, please do leave us a comment, and please subscribe so that you're notified whenever new episodes come out.